And welcome back to the BSC YouTube show. As always, your host Patrick Kerbler, and I'm joined by Tim and Jared on this, at least where I'm at, dark, cold Wednesday night. I'm sure for you guys, dark and cold as well, as we head into mid-November. Tonight on the show, we're going to be discussing the Michigan State game. We'll be talking about some coaching, I don't want to say rumors, but news updates as far as Jeff Brohm, Eli Drinkwitz, maybe even some Brian Daboll. But before we get to all that, let's just put a bow on Indiana. And I told you guys before we started, I feel like I was sort of coping with the loss on Saturday of, like, I don't want to say like I knew it was going to happen, but you try not to get your hopes up. And one of those things of, like, one of the ways that I coped was the third down call where Penn State went play action to throw to Andrew Rappelier in the flat for, you know, a 1 yard pass, eight yards behind, you know, the first down marker. And I think one of the ways that I coped was kind of saying, you know what, I understand why they didn't try to push the ball down the field. I no longer think that. As I've sat here these last couple of days and I've really stewed over it, why not throw the ball down the field? Like, if you're Indiana, what do you want Penn State to do in that situation? You want them to, well, maybe run the ball, but if not running the ball, you want them to throw something that's, you know, short of the stick so you can come up making tackles. So are you guys as angry about this as I am? Like, I'm a little surprised that I'm still as upset as I am about a 3-6 football team losing that game.
Yeah, I'm kind of back and forth on that call. Obviously, the defense was coached to keep everything in front of them, so it wasn't, you know, a great chance for success in that play. But I think the logic was, you know, if he can make a move or, you know, somebody just you know, makes a mistake in coverage, then he's got a lot of green in front of him. And worst case scenario, he doesn't get the first down. At least the clock is running and we're not just, you know, running up the middle. My issue is more the first and second down was just Catron right up the gut, you know, right into the teeth of the defense. First down, and then unless it was Singleton, I think it was Catron.
It was Catron, yeah.
Thank you. And then, yeah, second down, same exact play, right into the teeth of the defense. You know, Indiana calls a timeout, and there you go. You're already at third and long, and with a 2 minute warning coming up. So that was more my issue with that drive, is they didn't do anything a little bit differently those first couple of plays to at least set up a third and short.
Yeah, I think I said this on the post game show last Saturday, but yeah, that third down play call should have the little play action dump off to Rapley. That should have been the call on second down.
Yeah, I agree.
So you pick up like what? I don't know how many yards it picked up, like 3-4 yards. Like, okay, puts you in like third and six or something, but third and a little more manageable than like third and 10.
And I feel like there's a much better chance of catching the defense off guard a little bit
exactly
than it was on a second down.
No, and that's what Tim said. I know I went back and just re-listened to our show just because I was driving a bit on Sunday. And yes, I do listen to our show sometimes after, even though I'm here and doing it. But I know that was one of the things that Tim said of, like, play action doesn't really make a lot of sense there, because it's like, okay, you're most likely not going to be running it on third and eight and third and nine, whatever it was. And the other side of it with Indiana, like, the clock was kind of meaningless there at that point. And I say for Indiana, but for Penn State as well. There's 2 minutes and 9 seconds left. Indiana doesn't have any more timeouts. Whether Penn State, right, even if Penn State, their idea was, okay, at the very least, we want this to be a completion so the clock continues to run, that doesn't really make too much of a difference. The clock was stopping with 2 minutes left no matter what. Indiana didn't have any timeouts, so it wasn't like, oh, let's get Indiana to waste their last timeout. Indiana didn't have any timeouts left. So your basic difference was Indiana was going to start with the ball with 2 minutes left, or they were going to start with the ball with 1 minute and 51 seconds like it was left. Like, the punt was going to, even if there's an incompletion there and there's 2 minutes and 8 seconds left on the clock, or 2 minutes and 6 seconds left on the clock when the incompletion comes, Nwosu's punt is going to more likely than not get you to the 2 minute warning. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it's especially annoying when, you know, Indiana was using those timeouts. So it's like Kotelnicki and the rest of the, you know, offensive brain trust and Terry Smith, like, should have thought all that over through and through again of, you know what, we're going to be super conservative on this first and second down, but on third down, we're a 3-5 football team. right? Like what is with being conservative there? And I understand like having faith in your defense because they had been playing well, but it's also, I don't know. You watch NFL, you watch college. It's like you can only ask them so often late in games to come up with stops. And to the defense's credit, right? King Mac gets an interception. Penn State gets a touchdown. The following drive, Penn State gets, I can't remember if it was a three and out, but right, they force an Indiana punt with, you know, 4 minutes to go and a chance for Penn State to ice the game. So it's like, how many times do you want to depend on your defense type situation? So I don't know. It's just one of those things. I feel like usually I come on here after the games and am a little bit more, you know, emotional and more upset. And as time goes through, I realize that, you know, I was being a bit rash and irrational. And if anything, it's the opposite. Like I was not mad enough about that third down call. And again, maybe that was just cope with this, what this whole season has been. But any other final thoughts from the Indiana game before we move on to Michigan State?
Yeah, the one play that kind of, I honestly think I may have, like, this popped in my head, like, the first thing I woke up on Sunday morning, and it's popped in my head several times, but the play before Indiana's game-winning touchdown, when I can't remember who got their hands up and tipped the ball straight up in the air, and I mean, we all saw the same thing. Like, as we were watching unfold, we're thinking the ball's going to land right in Amari Campbell's hands, and we're going to be, you know, jumping through the ceiling with joy. And, you know, just some fluky thing where he just lost his footing and slipped and couldn't come down with that easy play, you know. And nothing against Amari. I think Amari's been absolutely awesome all season. Yeah. You know, really, it's just been a gem of a addition to the defense of the transfer portal. So it was just nothing he really did wrong. It was just one of those fluky things. But man, just when that ball was floating in the air, I was thinking, oh, this is it. This is going to be that cathartic victory that we've been waiting for and finally beat a top five team. And I don't know. I guess it's just, we just can't have nice things this year.
Yeah. I think the last time we actually had a like, clutch situation go our way, as far as I can remember, was Minnesota last year, that fourth and one fake punt run by Luke Reynolds, which ultimately helped them to run out the clock and secure a 1-point win and keep their playoff hopes intact. But ever since, it's just in these situations, we just seem to, you know, come up on the short end of the stick.
Yeah, I wrote about it in my random thoughts, just kind of what, you know, sums up this Penn State season is Amari Campbell. And again, like you said, Jarrett, like, has been very good this year. You know, he's one of those guys that I definitely hope comes back next year. But right, Amari Campbell trips over his own feet, trips on the grass, and can't make that interception. And the very following play, the Indiana wide receiver somehow defies, you know, the laws of gravity and physics and is able to, you know, get his feet just perfectly right on the grass. So that's a touchdown. So, yep, tough one, how it goes. And, man, it just would have been nice to get a win. It would have been nice to get a win. But that's why we still have three games left this season. Penn State is 3-6. They need to win out to make a bowl game, if that's something that, you know, they even want to go to. But I think, right, the idea at the very least, I'm pretty sure Terry has said that they won't turn down a bowl game. We'll see what happens if they're able to go 6-6. I mean, I don't know. It's a discussion for another day. But the first thing that they have to do if they want to make a bowl is they have to beat Michigan State. So Penn State goes on the road to Sparty this Saturday. Game is at 3:30 on CBS, I believe, correct? Yes. Correct.
Yes, CBS.
Yeah, so it's on CBS. Land Grant Trophy obviously has to get a national audience. Everyone knows that. It's a battle of winless Big Ten teams. Michigan State does not have any wins in the Big Ten. Penn State does not have any wins in the Big Ten. So one of these teams at O will be going. Jared, I'll start with you because I know you have worked on the Michigan State preview for BlackShoeDiaries.com. It's a website. Go check it out. What should we know about this Michigan State team?
One thing about their offense, and an interesting notice, they did replace their quarterback in their last game. Michigan State's coming off of a bye, so they do have that advantage. While Penn State was suffering this devastatingly emotional loss, Michigan State was at home resting for the week, so they may not quite have the same hangover. So Aiden Childs was their starting quarterback the last couple years. He's been He's very athletic. He's got, you know, big playability, but he's also, you know, been a little turnover prone, a little inconsistent. So they finally went another direction. I have to pull up his name because it's a mouthful. Alessio Milivojević. I'm not 100%
positive. I think it's Milivojević.
Okay.
I was trying to figure
like,
it out.
It's the first college football player's name I've seen that maybe belongs in the NBA, but
Yeah, I was trying to figure it out as well beforehand, so I'm glad you guys were struggling as well, because I was watching I watched the Michigan State-Minnesota game live after the Penn State-Ohio State game a couple weeks ago, but I was rewatching some of the highlights, and I still can't quite get it down, but yeah, Jared, we'll go with Tim's pronunciation, but continue.
Yeah, but he did toss for 311 yards against Minnesota, so had a really good first outing. Didn't throw any, I don't believe he threw any interceptions in his first start. So I am kind of curious to see if Child still does play, because, you know, as we do know about the Penn State defense, they really struggle against athletic quarterbacks that can run the ball, and he definitely fits that bill. So, you know, it'd be hard to bench, we'll just go with Alessio after pretty stand-up performance in his first start, but at the same time, you know, Childs definitely provides something that the Penn State defense has struggled with. So I'd imagine we'll at least see him in like certain packages or something. I don't think Childs is completely done unless there's something going on behind the scenes and he's leaving the program or something. But yeah, they have one really good receiver that they've been, he's kind of the focal point of the passing game, Nick Marsh. I believe he's like 6'3", real tall, like 6'3", 220. So someone who can cause matchup problems in the secondary.
A long Penn State recruit next will remember, big time Penn State target at one point. So good to know that was a nice miss for Penn State.
Yeah. They've got a couple of decent running backs, but they haven't really, there's nothing that you can point to with Michigan State that they do really well on the offensive side or the defensive side of the ball. You know, it's not like they're really good against the run, but their secondary struggles, it's just kind of been like a little bit across the board, which is why, you know, they have the same record as Penn State, 3-6 overall, 0-6, coming at the 6-game losing streak, but they haven't really been it hasn't been where with the case with Penn State where they've been a little more snake bitten, have things kind of go off the rail, where Michigan State's just kind of been beaten by the better team pretty much every week.
Yeah, I know defensively they're the worst defense in the Big Ten in points per game allowed and third worst in yards per play allowed, and even rush defense and pass defense. I mean, right, if you have those stats as a total defense, you're probably going to be bad everywhere, but rush defense is 14th in the Big Ten and pass defense is 15th in the Big Ten. So, yeah, not exactly a stellar unit. Tim, we'll go to you for this. One of the things that we talked about in previous weeks, you know, going to Iowa, going to Ohio State, and then coming home, Indiana, that tough, rough 3-game stretch was just kind of like, what are the vibes? What do you expect the energy to be? Things like that. What do we expect out of this Penn State team going into the Michigan State game? Like, is there, right, like, there's an argument for there to be more hope just based upon how, you know, this Penn State team is, they're not quitting for anything. Like, I don't think you look at that Iowa game, I don't think you can look at the Ohio State or Indiana game and say, like, Penn State just flat out quit. Was the effort where it would be for, like, a college football playoff game? Yeah, maybe not, but, right, they've been playing tough. Do we expect them to continue that, or is the fact that, you know, it's a little bit harder to get up when you're not playing the number one or number two team and you're playing a winless team?
I think there's some things they can continue to pick up where they left off from the Indiana game, especially that second half offensively when, you know, you saw even Grunkmeyer throwing vertically a little more often, you know, and you saw how it opened up the, all of a sudden, look, Nick Singleton can run the ball again. You know, I mean, it just opens up so many things for your run game when you have even the threat of being able to throw the ball vertically. And, you know, I understand, you know, he may not be successful like half the time doing so, but you still have to at least make the opponent respect your ability to do that. So I'm hopeful they'll do that for the entire game this weekend in East Lansing. And, you know, the other thing I noticed just post game, without being prompted, the very first thing Grunk said to the media is like, "We're not quitting." You know, just, you know, and other players were saying this, were either saying or implying the same thing. So, you know, I think it's a credit, I think, to Terry Smith. He's been able to rally the troops and not obviously hasn't gotten the win yet, but in terms of just, you know, not completely giving up on the season, they're still playing like there's something to play for. And for a lot of those players' cases, you know, the seniors or, you know, maybe those that might, you know, have their eye on the portal, whatever. They still need to put a lot of – they still need to show up and put stuff on tape to impress NFL scouts or whoever's looking at the film. So it was then for that. And, of course, you know, those are their teammates. So, you know, those are their brothers. You know, they still want to play for each other. And, you know, so I think I wouldn't expect them to show up flat and hungover. Like maybe you might sometimes think after such a, you know, emotional loss where it seemed like you were this close to upsetting the number two team in the country. But, you know, it's a step down in opponent quality as well with Michigan State compared to, you know, Jared said it too. There isn't any one thing they do particularly well. And in some places they're actually quite horrid. I'm looking at some stats here and they are 132nd in the country out of 136 FBS teams in quarterback sacks, and their Alessio got sacked 7 times a couple weeks ago in his first career start against Minnesota. Now it's a game they still, you know, they took him to overtime but you know, nearly pulled it out there. But you know, it tells me, especially because I saw one thing I noticed from the Indiana game is the pressures were back. Now, they've been missing for a while, but you know, whatever Jim Knowles did to maybe call more blitzes or what, but there's a heck of a lot more pressure on Fernando Mendoza. And I expect to see more of the same against Alessio. And, you know, Michigan State's offense, their offensive, they're not exactly Indiana. So I think they have a chance to really get pressure on him, get some sacks, maybe force him to make some bad throws, just some, you know, bad decisions could lead to some turnovers and maybe some short fields, which would be good for the offense, you know. So I'm thinking there's a real opportunity this weekend for the team to finally put it all together and come out with the win.
Yeah. And you mentioned point about – oh, sorry.
I was going to say real quick to your point about the pass rush, hopefully Chas Coleman will be back, who missed last week and just still day-to-day, I understand, but – hopeful that he'll be ready to suit up on Saturday.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say was just, you know, Tim, you mentioned, you know, emotional loss to Indiana, how will that impact? I have great news. This Penn State team, they are a lot of things they do very poorly. One thing that they are experiencing, they know well, is playing the next game after an emotional loss. Because, man, we haven't had a normal loss this entire year. Every single loss has been emotional in some way, right? The Oregon loss, the UCLA loss, I mean, the Northwestern loss where they got their coach fired, you know, wherever it might be. So I kind of do think, right, there's, of course, the theory of like, well, it's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And maybe that Indiana loss was it. But I think if we were going to see this team completely like full on quit, we would have seen it specifically against, I feel like, Indiana. So doesn't mean that they can't, they can definitely lose to Michigan State. I want to be very clear. I'm not saying that this is like a gimme for Penn State whatsoever. Like this team, if anything, has shown that they can
lose. There are no gimmies.
Yeah, they can lose to anyone at any time.
It doesn't, we learned that already.
Yes, we learned that 6 times over, and I'm so sick of the lesson. But Penn State is a 7.5-point favorite in this, which is, you know, that's a pretty hefty line, especially since, you know, Penn State is going on the road. What are we thinking? I know these last, you know, however many couple of weeks, we've all been picking against Penn State, and rightfully so. But for the first time in a good while, Penn State is the favorite. So what are we thinking as far as
– well, actually, before we go into predictions, I did want to clarify something. Michigan State does do something better than anyone else in the nation. Their punter actually leads the nation 49.7 yards per punt, which is just – incredibly impressive. So that's just wanted to actually clarify that and give them the credit where credit's due.
It's a very Big Ten stat right there.
Very Big Ten.
Score predictions, though. Tim, we'll start with you. Does Penn State finally get off the schneid?
Yes, I have them winning. I am winning and covering. I have 31-21 Penn State. Like I said, Michigan, this is definitely no game is a gimme. This is, definitely not a gimme. We know in the past East Lansing has been a house of horrors for this team, but Mark D'Antonio ain't walking through that door. Felton Davis III ain't walking through that door. That 3-hour thunderstorm delay ain't storming through East Lansing. And
do we know that for sure?
Chick-fil-A sandwiches.
There are showers in the forecast.
Okay, I didn't look at the forecast, to be fair, but, it's only Wednesday. But the point I'm trying to make is this is just a very different set of circumstances. And, Michigan State, I know there were rumors that maybe they might be getting rid of Jonathan Smith. I don't know if that's going to be the case or not, but it definitely has not worked out the way they hoped it would with him. I don't know whether or not a loss on Saturday would be the final straw for him, but I don't know. I feel like this Penn State team there's still a lot they feel like they have to prove and play for. And I'm not saying Michigan State's given up by any means. They're going to fight. They got an extra week off to get fresh. So they'll, I think it'll be close for the most part, but I think Penn State kind of pulls away in the fourth quarter.
Jared?
I'm going 28-14. I could see this game going a lot of different directions. I do kind of think it just depends on what Penn State is, how they're spiritually during this game. Are they hungover? Are they defeated? Did they use up all the gas they had left in the tank against Indiana? Or do they come out, playing close to their potential, come out, angry and, they have a opponent across the line from them that is – not nearly as tough as these last three games have been, and they should know that they can go out there and definitely get a win. And, if they go out and execute and, like I said, play to the potential, then they got a great chance. So hopefully that's the team that comes out and is fired up and really is craving getting back on the right side of the win-loss column and, has a chance to close up the season on a positive note with the schedule the rest of the way. So, I'd love to see a big play early, going back to what Tim said, a strip sack or big turnover, or just a big play in offense, even get the team fired up. And I think they could definitely put away Michigan State, but I could also see a scenario where, it's a close game going the second half and, they kind of start to think, oh, here we go again. So won't be surprised with just about any outcome. But I'm feeling it's more likely Penn State puts it together and wins by a couple scores and actually beats the spread.
I think this is a bad sign, but I also have Penn State winning. I have it 27-20. Vibes are pretty good. Vibes are pretty good for a Penn State team that is 3-6. I still can't believe that I'm saying that with just how this season has gone, right? Penn State going 3-6, the vibes being good. But as far as where Penn State is at, it feels, I'm not saying that I expect necessarily to win these last three games. I think Nebraska will be an interesting one, but I don't know. The energy feels good. Terry Smith feels good. He seemed pretty vibrant tonight at practice, gave out some funny quips just about how, it took him 3 weeks to get the offense to throw the ball down the field. He wished that would have happened sooner. So I don't know. Things seem like they're actually in a pretty good spot as far as, as far as where they can be. So Michigan State just also, I don't want to say they're like a dumpster fire because as far as like bad Big Ten teams go, I don't think that this is like the Chris Ash, like Rutgers level team, but they certainly are just they're a bad football team. And
I predict Michigan State's going to be joining the coaching carousel before too long. I feel pretty strongly that they'll be, looking to head in a different direction heading into next season as well.
It is interesting because this is only his, I feel like you don't hear Michigan State a ton when it comes to like the carousel stuff. Like there was a lot more like Luke Fickell, Wisconsin talk originally. I mean, this is Smith's, it's only his second season, but yeah, if they're going to finish the season winless in the Big Ten or, only have a win or two or certainly lose to Penn State, then yeah, I just don't know if it's going to get all that much better. Not sure what the buyout situation is, but I know Michigan State definitely has some pretty big benefactors, so perhaps they can take care of that. But we'll see. Hey, would be very cool for Penn State to beat Michigan State, and then they. Not that I'm rooting for anyone to lose their job, but it'd be nice to be on the other end of that this year after everything that's gone on.
Well, one last thing I want to add about this game is, you know, Gronk Amar, we've seen a really great progression of him from game to game, his first three starts. So just looking forward to seeing how he builds on that, but then also he's playing a secondary that's nowhere remotely as talented as the last three that he played in his first three starts. So you're going to go against, you know, he had this really challenging beginning to his career where he's going against three of the best passing defenses of the nation. And, you know, now he's got an opportunity. He's got that experience under his belt, that confidence, and, you know, he's going to be playing a much worse secondary. And so just interesting to see what he can make happen. And, you know, hopefully we're really happy with his performance come Saturday night.
This will be big time for him. I mean, right. I know Tim mentioned earlier just about, you know, players maybe being here, not being here, playing for, you know, the transfer portal, whatever it might be. I imagine in Ethan Gronkemeyer's mind that he wants to be a starting quarterback somewhere next year, whether that's at Penn State or elsewhere. So I think these last three games are, I mean, it's a performance for him to show what he can do. And Indiana was certainly, you know, a good sign, but we'll see. It'd be awesome if he came out and threw for 250 yards and three touchdowns and looked like Penn State potentially had their quarterback next year. All right, before we get on to coaching search stuff, please subscribe to the BSD YouTube channel. Tim, can you look up and see how many subscribers we're at right now?
Let's see here.
I think we're at 392 last we checked.
Let's see. Black Shoe Diaries.
Riveting stuff.
394.
394. Okay, so we're up to from last time we asked 400. I want 400, and then I want 409, and then I won't ever ask you guys again. That is all I want. Let's get to 400, then let's get to 409, and then we're good. That is all the subscribers that we need for the rest of our lives. So make sure you're subscribed. If you're already subscribed for early one of the 394, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Make sure you're liking the videos as well. Tell your family and friends as well. You know, it's about to be the holidays. You're at Thanksgiving. You're talking about Penn State football. You're talking about, you know, who Penn State's going to hire. Say, hey, I know three idiots on the internet who talk about Penn State football twice a week on YouTube. Go check them out. So,
well, I know the questions will be coming at my Thanksgiving dinner table. You know, what the hell happened to Penn State, Tim? You know, I'm just going to pull up one of our videos and, you know,
just play it.
I've got an explanation. Just here, listen to this YouTube video.
Yeah, exactly. It
happened for 45 minutes.
We have the reaction video that you can show to everyone. So, yes, thank you to all those who subscribe and like the video. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. All right. Time for our weekly coaching search updates. Going to be talking Eli Drinkwitz, going to be talking Jeff Brohm and Brian Daboll. I guess the first one we'll start with is Jeff Brohm, and I just want to bring up the actual tweet itself. It came from On3. This was earlier today at 1 o'clock. Louisville is working on a contract extension to keep Jeff Brohm with the Cardinals, and then they listed Pete Nakes, Brett McMurphy, and Chris Lowe are all reporting it. His name, Jeff Brohm, has been linked to the Penn State and Florida job openings. There's two ways to look at this. One, it's being reported because Louisville wants to put some pressure on Jeff and to let everyone know, like, hey, the same way like Ole Miss's AD came out after Cignetti got his extension and said, yeah, we're working on something similar with Lane, right? That was a clear way for the Ole Miss AD to be like, Ole Miss is trying to keep Lane Kiffin. Trust us, guys. Like, Ole Miss is trying to keep. So that's one way to look at it, is Louisville trying to, you know, get out there for public perception of we're trying to keep Jeff Brohm? Or do we think that Jeff Brohm is actually close on extension? He wants to stay in Louisville, his hometown. What are our thoughts on this potential news?
I'm not surprised. I mean, he's a Louisville native, played his college ball there. You know, I just kind of had a feeling that there was a good chance he's going to be remaining there unless there was just a huge difference in contracts, or he just really wanted to go out and go to blue blood if he was convinced he just can't you know, win at a high level at Louisville. So I guess I'm not terribly surprised. I think that's kind of one of the unique things about this coaching search, is there's so many of the, young up and coming hot names in the profession right now who are coaching currently at their alma maters. So, you know, while it wouldn't be shocking to see somebody leave Arizona State for a bigger program or Vanderbilt for a bigger program, it's just kind of a tricky situation, you know, and definitely not something that it's just something you have to take into consideration.
Tim, are you buying this or do you think it's smokescreen or leverage or whatever, you know, the terms are when it comes to coaching searches?
I think it's still a work in progress. I'm not writing off Brohm just yet, just because they report they're working on extension. Doesn't mean it's signed, sealed, delivered. You know, if he is like Penn State, like Pat Kraft's number one target, I imagine he's, you know, still working like hell to get him to consider coming to Penn State. You know, no offense to Louisville, but I just don't know if they have the resource, you know, to win, to like compete for win a national championship like you could compared to a Penn State. Yeah, of course, you know, there's a whole he's a Louisville native, he's at his alma mater. So, and he was a guy, you know, when he was at Purdue, I think it was only his second year is when Louisville opened up initially, and then he declined it because he felt like part of it was a sense of he didn't want to leave Purdue so soon and felt like he was really starting to get momentum going with recruiting and we're in the program. So you don't see that very often in the coaching profession. So he could be a rare, you know, one of those rare breeds who just, you know, he's at home. He wants to coach the rest of his career at home. So, but I don't think it's not over till it's over. And someone other than Jeff Brohm is named head coach at Penn State.
Yeah. And even with all this, I mean, I do think in general, when these coaches sign their extensions, they are signing it with the idea of like, okay, I am staying. But I mean, even as we talked about with like Matt Rhule, like if Penn State still wants Matt Rhule, like, I don't know. I think that they will get Matt Rhule. Like it doesn't prevent you from you know, potentially hiring them. But I do think in this case, like almost every coach, right, when this happens, right, a big job in LSU, of Florida, Penn State opens up, every coach gets put on the hot board, and you can go to any of the recruiting sites, the team specific recruiting sites, and like the first update is always like, yeah, the athletic department's, you know, they're already in talks with them on an extension. Like that always gets reported right away. When it's the national guys that start recruiting it, like Brack McMurphy and Pete Nakos and Chris Lowe, that leads me to believe that it's probably a little bit more real. And even from like, I know we make the jokes about like Jimmy Sexton represents everyone and is it like an agent ploy or whatever it might be, but Jeff Rom isn't a Jimmy Sexton guy. His agent is Sean Freibert. He's a Louisville native as well. So I think Jeff Rom very well might be one of his only clients. So I really don't think that this is a play on Louisville's end. I don't think this is a play on Jeff Brohm's end. I think it's simply just has Brohm probably talked to Penn State and Florida and LSU? Sure. Even Jane Franklin in the past has said that like there's total value in talking to other schools, whether you want to use it as leverage against your own school or you just want to get a sense of how other schools operate, right? Seeing how Florida operates, seeing what Penn State is doing. So I would expect that this is actually serious, and it leads me to believe that Penn State will be moving forward without Brohm as a candidate, which as a Brohmsexual is tough for me. I was the first guy on Jeff Brohm when everyone else was talking about God knows who else, but a shame. And also, let me just say, I mean, total Jeff Brohm to beat Miami this year and then to lose to Cal at home. So that is a Jeff Brohm experience, which I was definitely looking forward to, but potentially not happening at Penn State.
Still has a pulse, Pat.
He still does have a pulse, and he will, as long as
I mean, the chances still have a pulse.
As long as he has a pulse, he will continue to coach football. Other guy I want to talk about, we'll talk about Eli Drinkwitz last, is Bryant Daboll. I'm sure a good portion of our listeners are probably NFL fans or Giants fans at the very least, and are aware that the Giants fired Bryant Daboll earlier this week. What are your guys' thoughts? I'm curious on, like, I don't say the outsider's perspective, but I like non-Giants fans' perspective on Bryant Daboll. And Tim, are you a Commanders fan, Tim? I don't even know.
I mean, I don't really have an NFL team I live and die with, you know, but I grew up, I mean, I grew up in State College, which aligned itself with the Steelers crazy. And, you know, I guess I do have a soft spot for the Steelers and yeah, I guess I've lived in the DMV area for almost for 15 years now. And now that the Commanders aren't complete garbage.
Well, I have bad news for you. They're back to being garbage, but.
Well, I mean, I've seen worse, we'll just say.
Anyway, but, I mean, Brian Daboll, thoughts?
So they're Daboll. I don't know. I guess I don't pay close enough attention to NFL to have like a fully informed opinion on, but I do remember he was a successful coordinator with the Buffalo Bills, was instrumental in Josh Allen's development, had some pretty good offenses there. I think before that he was coordinating Nick Saban's offenses at Alabama, I believe.
National title
with one of them. So,
yep.
You know, he's got some college background to him as well. Not sure if I'd want him as head coach, but you know, if whoever they bring in as head coach wants to bring him in as an offensive coordinator, I'm all for it.
See, so I've heard this discussion before, and I, by the way, I do love that going back like a couple of weeks ago with all these coaches, with Eli Drinkwitz, with Jeff Brohm, it was like, okay, they can't make the playoff because they make the playoff, that makes it a lot tougher to hire them. So we need them to lose some games. And then they go and lose games, and then Penn State fans get upset and like, hold on, wait a second, this guy kind of sucks. It's like, well, So the only thing I want to say with Brian Daboll in that regard is, one, I think people like greatly overlook the Giants' tenure and just, I think, like how good of a job he's done. He's been an unlucky of sorts this year, and some of that is his own fault with, you know, time management and when to take timeouts and when not to, and kind of making Jaxson Dart just be a battery ram and getting him hurt and stuff like that. But takes over the Giants, immediately turns them into a winner. He wins NFL Coach of the Year, take the Giants to the playoffs. Daniel Jones has his best season with them, and then they completely fall off. But like the concept behind that was Daniel Jones already had concussion and neck issues prior to Daboll's arrival. The second season, Daniel Jones hurts his neck, has to miss games. And when he comes back, he then tears his ACL. So 2022 down the drain, 2023 with Daniel Jones down the drain. Now Daniel Jones, you're right, he goes to the Colts and looks a whole lot better, but it's like, okay, like we're missing the part where the guy had a broken freaking neck and he also tore his ACL. Like that's a pretty big reason why Jones then ended up struggling. And in essence, like what pretty much put in the end of the Daboll tenure, right? Unless the Giants were just going to come out with Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and a rookie Jaxson Dart, who does look good, and all of a sudden just looks so much better. I think Daboll was always going to probably end up getting canned. So I think that Daboll has enough cachet just from his work with the Giants, but certainly with the Bills, that he can get an NFL offensive coordinator job if he wants. Like that's not going to be an issue at all. Like, I mean, look at the Bills. If Joe Brady gets a head coaching job, which he's been trying to get for a couple off seasons, like pretty sure the Bills would just go right back to Brian Daboll. So I don't know if it's going to be like he can come to Penn State to be an offensive coordinator. Like if Brian Daboll's going to be coaching college, which I think that's like the big question of this all. It's like, does he want to do all that? Like the politics of coaching college, the fundraising, NIL, dealing with recruiting and just all that entails, like that's going to be the question. I don't think like football acumen wise, it's like, oh, is he only an offense coordinator? Is he not going to be a head coach? Like if he's going to take a college job, I think he's going to be head coach. It's not like Matt Patricia, who completely failed with the Lions, like horribly, but then also had stints with the Eagles as a defense coordinator and failed, and then was weirdly the offense coordinator for the Patriots and failed. Like Patricia had to go to Ohio State to be the defense coordinator because he failed then as a coordinator once again after his stint with the Lions. So that's my only thing with Daboll, because I have seen people be like, oh, well, as an offense coordinator, it's like, yes, of course we like him as an offense coordinator, but just because he failed as an NFL head coach doesn't mean that he's going to fail as a college head coach. At least that's just my opinion on it. But Jared, your thoughts on Brian Daboll?
I don't have any real strong opinions, honestly. I'm a reluctant Browns fan, and outside of them, I mainly just kind of stick to, you know, when two good teams are playing, you know, with a playoff spot on the line, or you know. So I can't say I paid too much attention to the Giants, so I don't really know too much about him inside and out and what type of fit he would be or anything like that. You know, his kids went to Penn State, and you know, everyone probably saw his first time he was spotted after being fired. He was notably in the Penn State parka. So, you know, you're gonna pull that up. Here we go. Doesn't look like he's having a great time.
All that headline that reacts is Dabes and confused.
I do think it's funny that he, okay, for those that don't know, his son was a Penn State student assistant of some sort. I've seen people say equipment manager. I'm pretty sure he was just like a student assistant, whatever that entails. So his son was at Penn State on the coaching staff or with the football team for some, in some light. His daughter now also goes to Penn State. I did do some research today. I'm man enough to admit that. Yes, I was looking up Brian Daboll's kids and stuff like that. So son went to Penn State, daughter went to Penn State. That's the main reason why he's wearing the Penn State gear in this photo where he got fired. And my guess is that kind of similar to like James Franklin, where, right, if you ever saw James Franklin anywhere, he was just in Penn State sweats and a Penn State sweatshirt. I imagine Daboll is a similar type of guy where I don't know how much clothing he has that's not just football coach attire. And my guess is that it was almost all Giants stuff. So this might have been, very well might have been like the only non-Giants gear that he owns, because he's just that type of guy. But no, again, I think that if he wants to deal with the politics of college, like just like generally speaking, even Daboll aside, like I think one of the more important parts of like whoever Penn State hires is hiring someone that wants the job. Like, yes, these guys get paid millions of dollars to do the job, and they greatly shouldn't complain. But like, it's still a hard job. It still takes hours and hours and hours, and it's really not a job. It's a life. It's a lifestyle, whatever you want to call it. So I think getting someone that truly wants a job is more important than like getting like the best football coach necessarily. Like, if it's just not a fit culturally, it's not a fit with, you know, just truly wanting the job, then we're kind of just wasting our time. So I think that's the most important thing for Daboll, but I don't know. I can see a world where you hire this guy, 'cause he's like, my kids went there. My daughter's currently there. I believe that she doesn't graduate until 2027. Again, I did some research. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to figure out everything out, but hey, I can go there. I can, you know, it's good move for my family with my daughter already attending there. And from like his perspective, recruiting wise, it's not like it was in like 2014, 2015, where the head coach was traveling all the time and was so knee deep in recruiting. Like, the recruiting staffs nowadays are so massively huge. The coaching staffs, right? You can have upwards of 30 plus people on the coaching staff and recruiting coordinators and like all this stuff. Like, it's not just like back in the day, which you had your GAs, you had like two recruiting coordinators and that was it. Like, now you can have this endless supply. So I don't think that head coaching recruiting is as important as it used to be. So I don't know. I can just see Daboll, you know, being the guy that, you know, can tout that, you know, I was there with Josh Allen when he was a rookie. I'm the guy who, you know, was his quarterback coach his first 3 years, turned him into who he was with the Bills and head coach of the Giants. And I won a national title with Alabama and worked under Nick Saban. Like, I don't know. I to me, he checks a lot of the boxes. Again, I'm not saying that this is like realistic whatsoever, to be very clear. Like, there's absolutely no proof that Brian Daboll and Penn State are going to even discuss the job. But if I'm Pat Kraft, I'm at least putting a feeler out there to see if he'd be interested. Because I think he'd be a really good fit for the job from a cultural perspective. Northeast guy as well, originally from upstate New York. So who knows? Who knows? We'll see. Also, Big Ten coaching experience. Where did he coach in the Big Ten, guys? Let's see. In the 90s, he was a GA at? Any guesses?
I'll go Iowa. Penn State.
What did you say, Tim?
Penn State?
No. Think of the episode.
Michigan State.
There we go. Look at that. Nick Saban. Also the Nick Saban type. He was a GA under Nick Saban. So I'm going to be banging the drum for Brian Daboll. You know, I was a Bromsexual. I'm now retiring that, and I'm a Daboll-aholic. So I need to go to rehab bad, because, man, I love this guy. Moving on from Brian Daboll, though, Eli Drinkwitz, who I feel like this has been like the one of the main constants in the search. Like, we think back to like our opening episode or not opening episode, but our first episode after James Franklin was fired, and we rattled off all these different names from Brian Hartline to Matt Rhule to Matt Campbell. I do feel like Drinkwitz, to Kurt Cignetti, I do feel like Drinkwitz is one of the few that has kind of stuck around from like the first like five names that everyone mentioned and is still available, not signing extension. No obvious outwardly rumors of him signing extension. So I just want to talk a little bit just about what our thoughts are about Eli Drinkwitz. I know people will talk about, you know, he's never been an SEC team that has finished above 500 in conference play, which is a very specific stat. I will just say that. But what are our thoughts on Eli Drinkwitz if he were to be the choice for Penn State?
He was my, when we went around and did the who do you want, who do you think it'll be, I picked him as the next Penn State coach just as the logical choice because if you look at it, out of all the names that we initially started talking about, he was the one who was most likely going to be on the outside, you know, looking in to the playoffs and be available at the start of December. So between that and the fact that he wasn't his alma mater, it just seems like, well, that's a logical thing where things could fall into place. But it also, if you're LSU or Florida or Auburn, then you could be thinking the same thing about him. So I'm not saying it's like destiny, but you know, it does seem like as far as the way this coaching search is going to unfold, it would be a much more logical choice than a DeBoer or an Elko for certain.
Well, fellas, speaking of Drinkwitz, I got some breaking news for you guys. Share my.
Is this real? I don't think this is a real thing.
Message board geniuses reports inside sources tell message board geniuses that Eli Drinkwitz has informed his team that he will be leaving Missouri to take the Penn State job.
Wow. Breaking news.
I know, breaking news here on the BSD YouTube show. And I'm just reading the message. It's probably from the Missouri 24/7 board that I hope I'm wrong, but I've been told by a very good source that he, being Eli Drinkwitz, addressed the team today that he's leaving for Penn State. Don't shoot the messenger. So there you have it, folks. Eli Drinkwitz to Penn State.
Leaving the team with three games to go. You love to see it. Yeah. No, right. I don't think that is quite happening. I do love the downvotes on that. I think that thing, whenever the screenshot was taken, it had like 60-some downvotes. I couldn't quite see, but love to see that. I like Drinkwitz a lot, and I think if right after when they fired Frank, if you said Drinkwitz was the move, I would have been like very happy with it. I still would be happy with it. He annoys me greatly though. Like I just don't, honestly, bad to say, I just don't like his face. Like he looks like he's smug. He generally will just say like dumb stuff that gets him like thrown in like the news cycle. Like this one was really not even his fault today, but today or last night he said, we got to get out of this. Oh man, it's the playoffs or a bust. If the season only counts for 12 football teams and we got 127, which is wrong, D1 football teams, that math's not going to math very well. There's a whole heck of a lot left to be proud of. I understand like the sentiment of like saying that. Where Penn State has been and the coach we just got rid of, like hearing that type of stuff. And to be very clear, like that answer was taken out of context because it was within the question of what is there left to play for this year. He was doing a radio show and the guy was kind of like, now that you're out of the playoff contention, like how do you talk to the team about what's left to play for? So to be very clear, he's right. Within the context, I understand it, but it's just the dumb stuff like that he's going to do here. And it's going to annoy me so freaking much, man.
So. Yeah, if he would have said that here after Penn State was, you know, say 7-3, the fan base would have absolutely lost their mind. I think we all know the fan base well enough to know that much.
Yeah. No, and right, there's
not always, wrong, but
no, but there are better ways to answer questions about, you know, what is there left to play for. And you don't have to mention it can't just be 12 team playoff or bust because okay, maybe short a little bit, but again, just as a Penn State fan going from James Franklin and being like, ooh, I like Eli Drinkwitz. And then the more you learn about the guy, he might just be Arkansas James Franklin. So,
you know, I have a theory on Drinkwitz. I think he might be a smokescreen because let's just say from what I've been reading, like over the weekend from rumors on the internet. So they did say to look out for some smoke screens within the next week. And here we are seeing a lot of like Eli Drinkwitz, you know, being mentioned. And look, maybe it is him, but could also be the smoke screen for the actual hire, who could be somebody that maybe we're not even talking about.
Can I push back?
We dismissed as unrealistic. So
can I push back on this a little bit? A smokescreen for what?
Like hiring, like maybe like Kalen DeBoer.
No. What I'm saying is, why would they need a smokescreen? If it's right, say that they want to hire Mike Elko or Kalen DeBoer, or they, you know, Sean McVay. Why would they need Eli? Like, why would they need a smokescreen? How would the smokescreen help?
That's how these things seem to work, I feel like.
I don't know. I understand what you're saying. My like take on this is like, this Penn State coaching search is not like national news, right? It's not leading SportsCenter with like, and today Penn State is inching closer to hiring Eli Drinkwitz. Like, it's really just, no offense, but the internet fodder, right? Whether it's stuff on Twitter or stuff on like the recruiting message boards or stuff on BSD or stuff around wherever. Like, I don't fully buy the smokescreen stuff. Like, if you go onto an Arkansas fan site, if you go onto a Virginia Tech fan site, you'll find the same stuff. Like, that's a smokescreen. We usually just say smokescreen when we want it to not be something that is actually going to happen, right? If there was a rumor that came out that said Kalen DeBoer is, you know, in talks with Penn State on potentially going there, would we say that's a smokescreen? No, we wouldn't say it's a smokescreen because that's what we want to happen. So that's my only takeaway. I guess I'll ask you guys this. If it's the field or Eli Drinkwitz at this point, what do you think is more likely? They hire someone that's not Eli Drinkwitz or someone that or they hire Eli Drinkwitz?
I think I'm going to always go with the field, no matter who you say, just because there's just so many openings. And so
I would lean towards the field too, Jared.
There's going to be a lot of twists and turns coming up that I think many of us aren't seeing. So give me the field.
There's still about 2.5-3 weeks left of this, I think. I'm assuming we'll get the Pete Thamel tweet maybe the day after the Rutgers game, or we'll get something like that first week of December. So
yeah,
you know, we'll know soon enough, I think.
Yeah, I think I lean the Eli Drinkwitz route at this point, to be honest with you. I just have kind of always, again, Jarrett, you mentioned before, like when we did the who do you want, who do you think it's going to be? Drinkwitz was my who do I think it's going to be back then. And I don't know. He feels like the constant in it. And I know that doesn't always necessarily work out, but I just call it a gut feeling. I think Drinkwitz wound up being the guy, but I am curious on timing because right. If it's the Kalen DeBoers, the Mike Elkos, even Brent Key, to be honest, I know Brent Key came out and said, you know, about potential coaching, you know, rumors, him moving. He said, you know, cut me open and see what I bleed. Not signing an extension yet, so we'll see, Brent. Like, I'll believe that when I fully see it. But to mention Brent Key and those guys, like, if they play, right, if say that it's Brent Key, say that Penn State or LSU or Florida, whoever wants to hire Brent Key, Georgia Tech makes the ACC title game, but they lose in the ACC title game, and now Georgia Tech misses the playoffs. Like, that could extend it to – following championship weekend. So I am curious about the timeline. If we get it immediately after, like you said, Tim, the Rutgers game, because I've always been kind of working with that. I think it happens November 30th or the days thereafter, but who knows? We'll see. I'm sure, you know, Penn State, as always, Pat Kraft going to be casting that wide net and be taking big swings, but I just get the feeling it's going to be Drinkwitz. So I think at this point, I would lean a little bit on the Drinkwitz versus the field part, just as we see, you know, so many guys start to sign these extensions. But yeah, still a lot of time left, but yet, I mean, 2 weeks from now we will be pretty damn close to potentially making a hire. So we'll be keeping tabs on the coaching search stuff as we continue on. For now though, let's get to some picks. Let me bring up our records. Jared, I do know you went 3-0 last week, so you are now 10-14 on the year. So big week for you. Tim, you went 13-11, or you are now 13-11. I believe you went 2-1. And I went 1-2 because, of course, I tailed your picks, which, you know, not maybe the smartest thing in the world. And I am 7-17. Our first game this week, Notre Dame goes to Pitt. This is going to be a two-parter. Who are we rooting for? And who do we think, you know, who wins, who covers? So Pitt is a 12.5-point home underdog. This is a noon kick, which I didn't even realize it was a noon. I had assumed for whatever reason this was a night kick. It is not. It's a noon kick. Who are we rooting for? And who do we think wins? Tim, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I wish there were odds on Giant Meteor because I would be hammering those odds like there was no tomorrow. But in the absence of that, did you guys see Pat Narduzzi's comments he made this week?
About he's right.
Notre Dame is not a must win. It's not an ACC conference game, but it was really bizarre. I wonder if there's some kind of reverse psychology going on there or something, but.
Pitt's goal. Listen, Pat Narduzzi, I'll give the man some credit. That was a great point. Pitt's goal is to make the college football playoff. Beating an opponent that's not even – they're not even a Power Four conference team. The difference between Notre Dame and, you know, UMass or Akron. What is the obvious difference? I don't know. Notre Dame's not in a conference. So in my mind, they're – right there with the group of five teams. So, listen.
But I do. I will say, though,
sometimes makes good points. So,
but those comments aside, I mean, I think this being, you know, kind of a rival. I don't know if it's considered a rivalry, a pseudo rivalry, but College Game Day is going to be there. This is going to be a big one. 12.5. I understand Notre Dame is the better team here, and I think they win. But man, 12.5 is a lot to lay on against a home team here. I'm thinking like a 7-10 point Notre Dame win. So give me Pitt to cover.
Hold on. So who are you rooting for?
Oh, who am I rooting for? I'm rooting for Giant Meteor.
You have to pick one. Come on.
I guess I'm rooting for Pitt. I'm rooting for Pitt to cover. I really could care less what happens besides that, but.
Oh, I think this is far and away an easy pick for me on who to root for. It's Pitt, 100%. Pitt is harmless. They're harmless little people.
Yeah, they're probably mouthing off about, you know,
who cares?
State season. Yeah, I just kind of want to, I don't know.
No, that's that. Hey, listen, Penn State has had a terrible season. Pitt's having a nice season. To them, I say, congrats. Have fun. Hopefully enjoy your win against Notre Dame. I don't care. They'll go on. They said to play Georgia Tech, Miami. They'll lose one of those games. They'll go 9-3. They'll go to the Duke Mayo Bowl. Narduzzi will get some mayo on himself, and that'll be their biggest accomplishment in you know 45 years. So, congrats. They're so not even close to Penn State at this point. You know, Onward State. The great Mike Reisman. Shout out to Mike Reisman. Wrote in 2016, just before Penn State lost to Pitt, that Pitt is not fit enough to be Penn State's rival. And that is even more true today than it was back then. Like Pitt is not even on the sphere of my concerns when it comes to Penn State. Notre Dame, on the other hand, they're a problem. They're a big, big problem when it comes to Marcus Freeman, what he's doing there and the way that he's able to recruit, especially the state of Pennsylvania and this region. Way more concerned about a Notre Dame that goes on another, you know, college football playoff run. So, anything to get them knocked off, anything to potentially get Marcus Freeman to, you know, maybe decide to leave Notre Dame, I'm down with. So I'm rooting for Pitt in this. I also like Pitt to cover the 12.5 is big, and I actually think Pitt is playing quite well. So I'll go with Pitt 12.5 too. Jared?
So I will say I'm cheering for Notre Dame going into this game because I like Marcus Freeman a lot more than I like Pat Narduzzi. However, I am pliable. So if they go in the second half and I see Pitt's got they're playing scrappy, they've got a chance to pull off the upset, the crowd's into it, they have a nice atmosphere going, then I could see myself kind of turning the tide and starting to get behind Pitt in this game if the situation calls for it. So As far as my pick for the game, I will go with Pitt and the 12.5. I'm on board with you. I think they've been playing really impressive football lately. That's a lot of points. They'll be at home. And Pitt is one of those teams, to Narduzzi's credit. They pulled off some pretty impressive upsets over the years. It kind of seemed like there was a stretch there where they pulled off a pretty big upset once a season for a little while. I remember them knocking off a really good Miami team. They beat, I believe they beat Clemson the year they won the national title.
2017, yeah.
Yeah, so they'll be up for this game, and yeah, I'm going Pitt in the points.
Yeah, no, I also want Pat Narduzzi to be Pitt's coach for the rest of my life. So the more big wins that he can get, so that he's cemented there, the better it is. Because, Iowa at USC. We go to the Big Ten. Iowa coming off a big loss of sorts to Oregon. I mean, if they had won that game, they would have really set themselves up for an opportunity to make the College Bowl playoff. Now they are very much on the outside looking in. They have to go to USC, who is trying to cheat their way to a College Bowl playoff spot themselves. USC is the 6.5-point home favorite. Where are we going with this one, fellas?
I'm taking USC. Iowa, I think they might be a tad hungover from last week, played a really close game of Oregon, but lost on a, late field goal. And then they got to fly halfway across the country to California. And yeah, I don't know. USC seems like a better team at home. I think 6.5 is just about where I would be comfortable taking the Trojans to cover.
I'm going to Iowa. I just think that, I do agree with a lot of things you said, Tim, but I think they can kind of drag USC down into the muck and mire and, make it a close game, kind of limit USC's offense. So I think this is going to be a game that's going to come down to a field goal one way or the other. So I'll take Iowa in the 6.5.
One of my earlier college football memories was Brad Banks at Iowa, one of my favorite players as well. Love Brad Banks. Still don't understand. Somebody will have to explain to me how Brad Banks was not Michael Vick 2.0 in the NFL. So that made no sense in 10-year-old Pat's brain. I was like, this guy, he's amazing. How is he not the first round, the first pick in the draft? But discussion for another day. Point I bring up, Brad Banks and that Iowa team played USC in the, I think it was the Orange Bowl, not the Rose Bowl, but the Orange Bowl. And they got slaughtered. I'm sure they played since then. I think they played in a bowl game in recent years anyway, even prior to the Big Ten joining. But that's always been ingrained in my mind, is that USC dominates Iowa. So not to go against my childhood hero, Brad Banks, but I'm going with USC as well. And we go to Texas at Georgia. And just for the record, it's not shocking that I'm 7-17, when the reason that I'm picking some of these games are because of things that happened in 2002. But that's just type of analysis you get here at Black Shoe Diaries. Anyway, last game. I don't know whether to do Bama, Oklahoma, or Texas, Georgia, but we decided to go Texas, Georgia on this one. Texas goes to Georgia, where the Bulldogs are 5.5-point home favorites. Tim, we'll start with you again. What are you thinking for this big-time SEC matchup?
I think I'm taking Georgia here. Texas has just looked kind of shaky, and I know they kind of stuck it to Vanderbilt last week, although Vanderbilt did come back and make it close towards the end. But I don't know. I think that game of Mississippi State still sticks out to me. They really had to rally to beat a struggling Mississippi State team. And then they played a close one with Kentucky. It was
overtime with Kentucky too, yeah.
On Kentucky, I mean, I don't know. You can only play with fire for so long before you get burnt, and I think Georgia's going to burn them.
I'm a little torn because I do think Texas offense has turned the corner a little bit. I wrote them off quite a while ago, but they, they've shown some improvement, some ability to make some explosive plays the last couple games. I know Mississippi State, gave them a lot of trouble, and Vanderbilt nearly came back as well. But I don't know. I just think their offense has shown a bit of improvement. Georgia's still trying to get used to them just, like, not being a Death Star where they're outclassing everyone. but they are a very good football team that knows how to win. I've been really impressed with just the grit they've shown this year, because there's been a few games where it wasn't looking pretty for them, and they just find ways to win. I'm really torn here. I think I'll go with the Dogs, I'll go with the Dogs by at least a touchdown. They've just shown to be a pretty resilient team, so I think they'll win at home by a touchdown at least. But I think Texas will give them a game for sure.
I've struggled with this one as well. I had Georgia down. I'm going to switch it to Texas, if anything, because both of you went with Georgia, so I'll change it up a little bit. The 5.5 is – anytime that 5.5 is a number for something, that always, like – why 5.5, right? 6.5, I understand, because you're trying to – generally, right? The books are trying to get you to bet that because it's under the 7. And if it's 4.5, it's because, you know, generally scores can end 24-20 and that type of thing. 5.5 is just kind of like a right. The 5 is a random number in football that it takes some weird math to get to. So I don't know. That number just seems a little weird to me. It seems a little bit small. It feels like this should be a little bit higher, which leads me to believe that maybe Vegas and sports books know something that we don't. So I'll take Texas plus 5.5 and see if that works out. Jared, like you said, they just kind of have a penchant for, I mean, I know that we're saying they're almost like supercharged Penn State, where they basically play to their opponent every single week, right? Whether it's Ohio State, whether it's Oklahoma, whether it's Kentucky or Vanderbilt or whoever. But generally find ways to win, right? So not saying they're going to win this game, but I'll take the 5.5 just because I think it's a little weird looking. So I'll take Texas plus 5.5. All right. So we got a few. Any parting words for the people?
Hope Penn State gets their first win since September 15th. Was that the date?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So hopefully we're finally celebrating a victory, because it's been very long.
A couple long months. So
yeah, who would have thought when we at the end of the Villanova game we were on here watching live that would be the last game.
I do think the season ends either 3-0 or 0-3, depending what happens Saturday.
Okay, that's a good take. Yeah, I think I can agree with that. It does feel like if they lose to Michigan State, Nebraska's good enough, at least defensively. Nebraska's good enough to definitely walk into Beaver Stadium, win, and then, yeah, who knows with that Rutgers game. Yeah, we'll see. Just want to give people a heads up. We are all – well, I shouldn't say we are all busy, but I'm busy on Saturday. I have another wedding and my endless wedding tour in the fall. Tim is going to be out as well. So we will be streaming, doing our post-game show on Sunday at some point. I still need to connect with Jared on that just to set up timing and stuff like that. But just as a heads up, we will not be live immediately following the game on Saturday. Instead, we'll go live on Sunday to discuss everything. So we'll probably be like later afternoon, maybe later in the evening. I don't have to check with Jared and see what works, but we'll be live at some point on Sunday. So we will see you then. As always, thanks for watching, and subscribe, like the videos and stuff like that. And we'll see you Sunday.